Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
It's very tired today.
Same. I can't sleep. I was too excited last night and the night before. Literally on Friday night, I could not go to sleep. I kept falling asleep for like half an hour and then waking up again because my brain could not stop moving.
So I see. Annoying.
I hate having a hyperactive imagination. It's great for some things. Yeah, also the guy who is running, so to everyone who's listening, I was in like a Broadway boot camp or whatever, over the weekend, and the guy who was like the head man, who's like the singer guy, that's what he taught us, Isabel McCullough from The Prom came on yesterday to talk to us, and he's like, we're best friends now, and I was like, David, we are the same person, because he's like, we met once, guys, do you think she's gonna FaceTime me, like, every day, or do you think it'll be, like, an every other day thing, because, like, I think it'll be every day.
Love that for you.
And I'm like, same. Yeah. Grace, what have you been doing this weekend? Watching Pitch Perfect with me.
That was fun.
That was a time. I'm really excited to watch the second one, because I really like when they go to that camp. I'm so tired. Okay, so like, oh, I don't want to. So I'm really fun, guys, and today I decided that we were gonna balance the depressingness of this entire episode because we're talking about Mary's life from December 10th, 1533 to like June 1536. So basically Anne's time as queen, because that was when Mary was treated the shittiest.
Poor Mary.
But here's the thing. I'm trying a lot to stay out of, like, the Anne-Mary thing because we really don't know how bad or how good it was. Because it's likely that a lot of the stuff that Chapuis said or that, like, has been written was very exaggerated in order to make Anne look worse, to make people have sympathy for Mary. But also, like, it's coming from somewhere. But yes, I just don't want to get into all that because here's the thing. Everyone thinks that if you are into, like, the Tudor time period that you have to, like one person above, like, all the others. But you can like them all.
Yes.
Or you can hate them all, too.
Your choice.
I hate some of them, too, guys. Don't worry. But I decided that to be fun, we're going to talk about Mary's zodiac placements.
Wait, for, Quinn, like, what is your zodiac placement?
Oh, God. I know my ascendant and my sun sign. Wait, I actually have. I think I have a picture of it. I think I have a picture of it somewhere. So basically, if you don't like this sort of stuff, just like skip ahead. I don't know. But I just thought that things are really depressing right now for Miss Mary. And we could talk about maybe why, if zodiacs, you know, work, then why maybe she did some of the things that she did. Because she's very interesting character. And there's something to talk about with her rising sign that I think is very interesting. Where is it? God. I'm sure I have a picture of it somewhere. If not, I will search it up. Grace, what are your big three in the meantime?
My big three. My sun is Virgo.
Yeah, I know that.
My moon is Capricorn.
Yeet. And my Capricorn
is Cancer.
We're just a fun time.
Totally. That sounds so great, doesn't it?
Yeah, you just sound really... My parents and my brother are all Capricorns, all three of them. We don't really, I don't think that Capricorn and Aries always work well together. And it's kind of very much all three of them against me. So, wait, I'm literally on a website looking at this. So, Grace, why do you think that, what do you think do you think that your astrology signs, your zodiac sign placements have anything to do with how you actually are?
I'm glad you asked, Quinn.
One, two, three, four.
I definitely think they have something to do with.
Yeah.
I was reading a bit about them and I was like, wow, got me there.
Oop.
Too accurate, but you know. It's fun.
It's fun, guys. Okay. Collingwood. There we go. Ooh. Okay. Let's calculate my birth chart. I know two of them. I just don't know the third one. So, Okay, so guys, I'm really fun. My sun sign is Aries. My birthday is, well, this is on Sunday, March 21st, but my birthday is on March 23rd, so I'm an Aries. Fun time.
Aries squad. It's Aries squad season right now, isn't it?
It literally is, yes. First of the zodiac. I actually have a mug that talks about Aries that I bought when I redid my room like 4 years ago. We're natural leaders, but we're also fire signs, so we're kind of crazy.
Yes.
And that's kind of true. But here's the thing. My moon is a Virgo. And that definitely, I don't think that my Aries and Virgo signs work together very well to create a very functional human being. So my sun is an Aries and my moon is a Virgo, which means like, what is going on with me? I don't know. And my ascendant is a Libra. I don't know anymore. I'm so tired.
And air.
Yeah, this is why I'm literally all messed up. And my MC or whatever is a Cancer.
Mercury?
I don't know. I'm going to say so. Henry VIII is a Cancer.
Ew.
He is a Cancer. He is a Cancer. Okay, so let's talk about Mary's signs. So I wrote down a few things from each of them that I thought represented her as well. So her sun sign is Aquarius. Here's the thing. When I was in grade 6, we did an entire unit on zodiac signs. I'm not even kidding. We did a whole unit on it, but like only on our sun signs because we were like 12. But yeah, we all had to like color in pictures of like our signs, and like we had to go around and figure out who we would be compatible with, which was really weird because, you know, we were 12 and our teacher's like, who'd you be compatible with? But it was played off as like friendship. But, you know, not everyone was thinking that. But Aquarius, her sun sign, she's locked into a quest to pursue her guiding principles. Burning people because they're not your religion. That maybe sounds true. She's socially aware. I mean, here's the thing. We've got to think about everything within the context of her time. To her, Protestantism is like evil. So to her, that's being socially aware. Civilized. Yeah. I must say so. She's a little princess. Impartial. That is not true. It says she's impartial. Who'd you kill, Mary? Literally 300 people. Outgoing. I don't know. I don't really know her, but she did show off her talent a lot. That kind of seemed, you know. Yeah. And then she's cold, aloof, overly rational, but also erratic. You can't really track what she's going to do. And blinded by science and reason. And in the 1500s, science wasn't as big of a concern as religion. So she's blinded by religion and reason, which to her is kill the Protestants. As a Protestant, I am humbled. Her moon is an Aries. Twins. Just kidding. She is very hot-headed. What? That's not me at all. Also definitely not Mary. Literally it is. Look at her dad. All three of his kids got like that temper. I don't think they ever had a chance. Like, I feel like Jane Seymour should have canceled out Henry. But Henry is just so strong, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a crazy, crazy boy. They know what they want, Aries moons, but their desires, so what they want, it feels like a need to them.
Wow.
Tricky, tricky, tricky. And they're emotionally satisfied by victory. Yeah. Maybe a little too accurate for this girl. Her rising is a Sagittarius. I don't really know a lot about Sagittarius. I don't have any that are like important in my life. I have several Aquarius friends and I am an Aries, so like we're good there. Religion and philosophy attract rising Sagittarius signs. Wow. They dream of a just and quote unquote correct order of things. Justice is their life's work. Yeah, again, here's the thing. This is what I thought was interesting. Mary shares an ascendant sign with Lady Diana, Princess of Wales. Right. And I think that they have several of the same traits, just in a different way.
Wow, look at that.
Because Diana's very human rights, humanitarian, that sort of thing. She justice was her life's work. But Mary's version of justice is very different from Princess Diana's. Maybe because they were born in different things and different things happened to them in their lives because everything shapes people differently.
Right.
That is my spiel. I was like in I don't even know what class it was. We were meeting Jamal. Gosh, I'm so sorry. He's not listening, but I don't remember what his name was. His last name was Remy. He was in The Lion King and he was in Ain't Too Proud. We were meeting him today and I was just like frantically writing all these things down. Now I feel really bad, so I'm going to the website. Not the website, the email. sorry, I just remember Isabel because Jelani. He was really nice. Jelani, you're definitely listening. You are awesome. So let's talk about Mary's trash life for her teenage years.
Look at that.
wow, we're having trash life in our teenage years too. But here's the thing. I don't think it's as bad as this because we have two parents, both of us. She has none, really, because Henry's being a douche and Catherine's being, I'm a martyr. Yeah, we have some strong feelings about Catherine and Aragorn, mostly me. Grace is just like, okay. Grace, my theory that I sent you about...
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring it up on here because I feel like it would offend people, but... I made a TikTok about it. It's really fun. Okay. So, we already kind of talked about this in Anne's third episode. Yeah. Second, fourth, I don't know. One of her middle episodes. It was her third episode, I think. On December 10th, 1533, three-month-old Elizabeth was taken from court to Hatfield in Hertfordshire, which was a house that was like 17 miles from London. So it was like riding distance, but not like so close that she was going to get sick because she was 3 months old and the only heir to the throne that Henry thought was an heir to the throne. she's pretty important, that little baby child. Indeed. Yeah. The next day, Thomas Howard, Duke of Norfolk, was sent to French. Sorry, Mr. Kennedy, just finished a whole week in your class. Can't speak French. Beaulieu. It's like beau, like beautiful, Liu, Beaulieu, I don't know, to inform Mary. She's in a palace. I don't think it's a palace. It's like a house. It's a nice house. She's somewhere nice right now. To inform Mary that her father desired her to go to the court and service of Elizabeth. And he called her princess. So he's like, your dad wants you, well, the king, wants you to go to Princess Elizabeth's court to be in her service. And Mary responded that the title belonged to her and no one else. She's like, you're not calling my three-month-old bastard sister princess. She's Lady Elizabeth. I am the princess. Norfolk didn't really respond. He said that he hadn't come to like argue with her, but only to accomplish what Henry told him to do, which is kind of fair. Like, he was not sent there to be the man to resolve all the family drama. When Mary was told that she wasn't going to be allowed to take very many servants with her, only like a few, Margaret Pole, our bestie, we talked about her last episode, who was her longtime governess and her godmother, she'd been in Mary's entourage since Mary was 3 years old, asked if she might continue to serve Mary at her own expense and then also pay for the whole household. But her request was refused because Henry wanted Mary, just like Catherine, to be separated from people that she trusted to encourage her submission to his will. So, you know, she's 1533. She is, God, like,
yeah,
young, 17. And he's like, sorry to my, like, it's like the middle of the end of her teenage years. And he's like, yeah, so I'm going to separate you from everyone that cares about you.
Yeah.
Peace. Because Elizabeth is a baby. She doesn't understand those things yet. Mary was to be isolated in a household that was run by Anne Boleyn's uncle and aunt. Wow.
Wow.
That's going to make her feel comfortable. That makes her feel really comfortable. Their names are Sir John and Lady Anne Shelton. Shelton is also Madge Shelton's name.
Wow.
Madge Shelton is Henry's little mistress that was in Tudors and was really interesting. And is like, Madge. And she's like, yes, yes, Your Majesty. Gosh, love you, Madge. So I'm going to say that those are probably her parents since they are Anne's uncle and aunt. Madge is her cousin and their last name is Shelton. But don't use that in a research paper if that's your source. Mary was supposed to be like really humiliated. She was to be called like little more than a servant. Chapuis said that she was lady's maid to the new bastard and she was basically a prisoner. Fun. Once she arrived at Hatfield, Norfolk asked her whether she would not go and pay her respects to the princess. Mary doesn't like that. She responded that she knew no other princess in England except herself and the daughter of My Lady Pembroke, which is Anne. So the daughter of My Lady Pembroke had no such title. She might call her sister, as she called the Duke of Richmond, brother. So she's like, she's just my bastard sister. So I call Henry Fitzroy brother. I'll call her sister, but I'm not calling her princess.
Wow.
Bestie, watch your tongue. As the Duke departed, Mary asked him to tell Henry when he got back, like carry him a message that the princess, his daughter, begged his blessing. Norfolk refused. I'm pretty sure they were told, like, don't do anything she wants if she refers to herself as princess, because that's not what we're on right now. But Mary retired to weep in her chamber, and Chapuis noted that she does that continually, so she's always crying in her bedroom.
Yeah.
Sounds very normal for a teenager, but I feel like it was probably a lot more, and she also had, like, a lot to cry about. You know? I would cry a lot, too, if I was her, and I don't even like crying.
Yeah.
I'm, like, a crying problem. Like, Chandler and Friends. Mary, just like her mother, was now under, basically, house arrest. She wasn't allowed to walk in the garden or the public gallery of the house that she's living in. She also wasn't allowed to attend mass at the church that was adjoining, in case the neighboring like peasants or whatever saw her and cheered for her as their princess. So that's nasty. Henry reproached Norfolk for he told him that he went about his task too softly. That's okay. I don't think he was very soft, Henry. And he also resolved that he was going to take steps to get rid of Mary's stubbornness and pride. This sounds very, like, abusive.
Yeah.
Sorry, my 17-year-old isn't responding to exactly what I want her to do. So I'm going to take steps to get rid of her stubbornness and pride. That sounds really creepy. But Mary's resolve was very, very hard to break. She was very committed to her mom. She had a lot of love for her mom, obviously, but she was, like, way more dedicated to her mom than her dad, I guess, like, than her dad wanted her to be. She was determined to be as difficult as possible. for days, she remained in her chamber, which Chapuis said that she said it was the worst lodging of the house and it wasn't a place fit for a maid of honor. But again, we don't know if that's just, like, how much of that is just Mary whining, because teenagers exaggerate a lot. And she could have been trying to make her position seem worse than it was. She definitely was not having a fun time, though. She would eat a really large breakfast so that she didn't have to eat lunch in, like, the main hall. Because if she ate lunch in the main hall, I'm pretty sure then Elizabeth would be under, like, the canopy that she, as a baby princess, gets to eat under. And Mary would have to not sit under the canopy. So that would be, like, a really big insult to Mary's pride. She also often pleaded sickness as an excuse to not have to go to supper and have it brought to her chamber. Over the next 2 years at Hatfield, Lady Anne Shelton was repeatedly reprimanded for not being harsh enough to Mary and for showing her too much kindness and too much respect. Oh. Yeah. Whenever Mary, like, protested against things that were happening to her, she was punished. First, they got rid of all of her jewels, and then they got rid of almost everything else. By February 1534, she was nearly destitute of clothes and other necessaries, and she had to ask her dad for help. Henry has a bit of a habit of taking his daughters when he doesn't want them anymore and not letting them have any clothes.
Nice.
Toddler Elizabeth in 1536 would agree.
Yeah.
And toddlers grow a lot more than teenagers do. So sure. They need a lot more clothes. They also dirty them a lot more. I was watching the baby that lives next door get her socks completely dirty while I was dancing today out in the backyard. But even once she had to ask her dad for help, she was that desperate. She still remained very defiant. The messenger that she sent was instructed to accept money or any clothing if Henry offered it, but not to accept anything, any writing in which she was not written as princess. Miss Girl, you need clothes. Just accept it.
She's so prideful.
Oh my god, it's her mom. I'm sorry. Catherine needed to chill out. Because if she had given up or gone to a nunnery, then Mary wouldn't have been so mad at her dad.
Yeah.
Also, Anne probably wouldn't have died. Sorry, just gonna say it, because Henry was so worried that Anne was gonna do what Catherine did and not accept a divorce and keep bothering him and bothering him. That's part of the reason that he was okay to just get rid of her like that. So thanks, Catherine. Sorry, not to on you if your favorite queen is Catherine of Aragon. She's amazing in some respects. They all have flaws. They're all human. But oh my god, she just also, she probably, if she had said yes, it probably would have, Anne and Henry probably could have been married earlier, and then they would have had more time to make a child, that they could have had a boy. Just saying. Or Anne wouldn't have been as stressed, and True. Then her babies maybe wouldn't have died. Sorry, that was a digression, but I don't even care. I'm I have so much anger about that. That's why I like reading fan fictions where they get rid of they don't get rid of her. She says yes, and then it's all good. There was so much hostility in the court towards Mary that Sir William Fitzwilliam, the guy with the best name, and the treasurer of the king's household, was literally able to say about Mary that if she was not obedient, she's the king's daughter. Even if she's not legitimate, that's still Henry's kid.
Yeah.
That if she wouldn't be obedient, he wanted basically, this is it's in old English, but I'm pretty sure you can get the gist. I would that her head was from her shoulders, that I might toss it here with my foot. At which point, according to two witnesses, he kicked his foot forward at some rushes. So he basically was if she wasn't obedient, I would just chop her head off.
Oh.
That's a teenager, William.
Chill, bro.
Chill. Around the time that Mary joined Elizabeth's household, Catherine managed to send her daughter a letter through their secret messaging things that they had, in which she told her daughter to obey her father in everything except for things that would offend God. I feel like maybe she should have been more specific, because I would love if my mom was you can say yes to us about any, you have to obey us in everything except for things would offend God. So I could be sorry, doing my chores would offend God. I can't do it. Sorry, that would offend God. But in the letter, there's a huge suggestion of a shared martyrdom for the two of them. So Catherine reassures her daughter that if the matters didn't improve on earth, they would get better in heaven. So I know that Catherine is trying to be a good mom, but you don't tell your kid that don't worry, when we die things will be better, but we just have to keep holding on until we die.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird. Letter this letter encapsulates many of what would become Mary's guiding principles for the rest of her life: to dedicate her life to God, to remain chaste, and to always accept struggles with good grace, because better things will be coming when you die. Accompanying the letter, Catherine also sent two books, De Vita Christi and St. Jerome's Letters to Paula and Eustochium. They were about women who lived austere lives and dedicated themselves, you guessed it, to God. So she's giving her reading material. Oh, God. Even though Mary loved and respected Henry as her father, she refused to submit to his will as king. And at the vulnerable age of 17, that's like very painful rejection. I think that Mary doesn't see her dad as the king, maybe as much as she should, because for her childhood, he was just her dad.
Yeah.
Like, he was still in charge of her, and she knows he's king, but, like, she doesn't really understand it. Whereas, like, in contrast, Elizabeth learned that Henry was king at, like, 2.5.
Yeah.
So when she grows up, she's more, like, cautious with him than True. Mary maybe was growing up. She also, Henry also, like, died when she was, like, 11, so. yeah, because, you know, he didn't have the second half of his children until he was pretty old. And he also did not have the greatest health. But in January 1534, Henry visited the household at Hatfield, and Mary was made to stay in her chamber because he didn't want to see her. That's nice. Instead, Thomas Cromwell and the captain of the guard were sent to Mary to urge her to renounce her title. Mary responded that she had already given her answer. She's not going to do it, and it was useless for them to try and convince her to do otherwise. But unfortunately for her, she still craved her father's favor, and she, like, begged for permission to go see him and to kiss his hand. She was refused once again, and she went out onto, like, the terrace at the top of the house as he prepared to leave. This scene is in The Tudors. Do you remember it?
I do.
When he comes to see Elizabeth, yeah, and he's like, this little girl will preside over empires one day, Lady Bryan, and it's them being like, look, Elizabeth, this is the girl that's going to become Queen Elizabeth the First. You're like, we get it.
And then Mary's like...
yeah, and then Henry goes out, he's mounting his horse, and he spots her because she's literally just out on her porch waiting for him. And he sees her on her knees with her hands together, and he bows and he touches his cap to, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how to bow. I've only ever been made to curtsy. Mary didn't see him again for more than 2.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, but that happened in The Tudors when Sarah Bulger went out and was, like, crying, and he was just, like, hello, child, and then left.
Yeah.
God, I love Sarah Bulger. She's just a treat. When Anne went to visit her daughter at Hatfield in March, 1534, she, to Mary, okay, the lady that I got this book from, like, most of the research that I did, it was from this book, it's very, like, anti-Anne, I think, because, again, people, make you take a stance to choose one over another.
Right.
And you don't have to do that, guys. I mean, are you going to have favorites in, like, Catherine versus Anne, or Anne versus Jane? Like, yes, you are, but, like, that doesn't mean that you need to, like, hate everything that the other people do.
Yeah.
You can, like, I think Jane Seymour is boring, but do I feel bad for her? Yes.
Do I feel bad for all of Henry's wives? Yes.
Yes. God. Even, like, the ones that everyone's like, oh, but, like, she survived. I'm like, yeah, but, like, she had to deal with him, and he literally put her through emotional torture when he was going to arrest her, and then she was like, no, I didn't mean it. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then he literally let, like, I'm sorry, that, just a read up on when Catherine Parr almost got arrested, guys. Mm. It's a story. Also, yeah, when Anne goes to visit Elizabeth in March, she, like, went to go see Mary. So Mary has now come face-to-face with Anne before she's come face-to-face with either her dad or her mom. Probably wasn't, like, a fun thing for her.
Yeah. No.
She didn't want to see Anne. She wanted to see them. But she, like, told Mary to visit her and honor her as queen, saying that, like, if you do this, then I'll make sure that, like, your dad can shut his face and he can, like, say, be nice to you and all that. Because, like, if she recognizes Anne as queen, then she's recognizing that she's illegitimate.
Yeah.
But I don't think Anne said that outright because, you know, Miss Girl, is trying. I really do think that she was trying. Definitely there was a little bit in it for her, but, like, I do think that she was trying. Once again, this is a Tudor scene because they actually have quotes from it, so they are going to use it. They also really played up that whole Catherine and Mary versus Anne storyline in The Tudors.
Yeah.
So they definitely needed it. But Mary replied that she knew no other queen in England except her mother, but if Anne would do her that favor with her father, she would be very much obliged. So Mary's like, sorry, you're not the queen, but, like, you can, if you want to do that, that'd be great. Anne's like, blah. So Anne departs. She's mad. I mean, I would be too. I wouldn't be surprised if Anne had some sort of, like, Scorpio or Aries placement somewhere.
Would not be surprised.
I think she, Nathan at Queen's Podcast has a theory she's a Gemini, and you know what? That works for me, but I feel like she's got a lot of fire sign in her.
Yes. Wait, what is Gemini? Air?
Earth?
Earth? No, it's not Earth.
No, bruh, I don't do astrology. I do my own astrology. It was just that, like, Gemini are very, like, two-faced, and Anne's very, like, she has two different, like kind of personalities that she switches on and off. It's very hard to know what, like, you're going to get. And also, if she's a Gemini, then that could also explain why Henry was so, like, yeah, let's kill her now, because it's her birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Anne departs. She's mad. Fire sign somewhere in her. I know she has one. Is flaring, and she swears that she would bring down the pride of this unbridled Spanish blood. Unbridled for our non-equestrian horse girls in the audience is kind of like a reference to, like, when you put a bridle on a horse, you're like taming it. So
yeah,
Mary is not tame. Her Spanish blood, and Spanish blood, like, that's that stereotype is, like, very arrogant, very prideful, thinks they're better than everyone else. Catherine. That's not even Catherine. It's like her parents. Her parents are kind of... They're can of worms. On March 24th, 1534, guys, we're almost at the anniversary.
Wow.
Pope Clementine, passed his final sentence on the marriage of Henry and Catherine. It was and is valid and canonical. So Catherine's cause had triumphed, but this, obviously, Henry's not going to change his mind. So it's a hollow victory for Catherine, and it really came too late to alter anything that was going to happen. A week later, the Act of Succession, which is a Henry law, received royal assent, so it endorsed exactly what the Pope's sentence had rejected. So Thomas Cranmer, Archbishop of Canterbury, decrees in favor of Henry's marriage to Anne, and the succession was now transferred to Henry's male heirs by Anne or any subsequent wife.
Right.
Because, you know, she could die. That's not saying, like, right now we're going to kick her out. It's literally she could die. In childbirth, or just it's 1534, people die. In case there was no male heir, the throne would pass to Elizabeth, and Mary was excluded from the succession. And that's nice. I would literally, as an older sibling, and Cooper's only 2 years, 9 months, 5 days, and 40 minutes younger than me. If he got to do something before me, like, and I was purposefully excluded, I would be so mad because he's, like, younger than me, and I'd be like, I'm here first, I should get to do it. And this is literally, like, a birthright thing, right? Like, it is the order you were born in.
True.
So, obviously, Elizabeth, in the eyes of English law, is the heir, but I could understand why Mary would be so upset, especially because Elizabeth is a baby and Mary is a grown teen.
Yeah.
Like, Elizabeth cannot rule right now. Mary actually could.
True.
Like, but yeah, obviously Mary is illegitimate in the eyes of English law, and English law now is the most important thing, so, like, she needs to calm herself, but I can understand why she'd be upset.
Yeah.
An oath to the act's contents was to be sworn by all the king's subjects, and if you didn't swear, then you would be charged with high treason. Yeah. When the Act of Succession was passed, Thomas Cromwell made a note to send a copy of the Act of the King's Succession to the Princess Dowager, Catherine, and the Lady Mary, with special commandment that it may be read in their presence and their answer would be taken. Commissioners were sent to Catherine at Buckden, and they asked her to sign. She, of course, refused, because, you know, she's going to die, and then she's going to have a great time in heaven.
Yeah.
I think I should contact her via a Ouija board and see how she's doing.
Right, right.
Catherine, I just really hope that they're together. That's all that I care about. No matter what is after you die, I just really hope that Catherine and Mary are together, because literally that's all they really... I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that was, like, Mary's one real love, because Philip was nasty. Mary also stood firm. As Chapuis described it, some days ago, the king asked his mistress's aunt, who has charge of the princess, if the latter had abated her obstinacy. And once he was told no, he said that there must be someone about her who encouraged her and conveyed news from the queen, her mother. On Lady Shelton suspected one of the maids at the household, who was quickly dismissed, and Chapuis reported that the princess was much grieved at this, because this maid was the only one who Mary really trusted, and by this maid she did get letters from Chapuis and from others. So they basically took away Mary's only person that she trusted at her new house.
Yeah.
So nice. So nice. Except for maybe the baby Elizabeth, but baby Elizabeth cannot get Mary letters or talk to her. She can't talk because she's not even a year old yet. Apparently I talked at 9 months, but Elizabeth is not there. It's like March, April. Faced with Mary's intransigence, I don't want to explain that word, I'm tired, and realizing that Henry wasn't going to get his way either by force or by being mean, he changed tactics and began to beg her to lay aside her obstinacy on the promise that she would be rewarded with a royal title. So basically he's like, if you say no, if you say yes, I'll give you your title of princess back and you can come back in the line of succession just after Elizabeth. And Mary, again, refuses to yield because she said God had not so blinded her as to confess for any kingdom on earth that the king her father and the queen her mother had so long lived in adultery, nor would she contravene the ordinance of the church and make herself a bastard. I mean, I also would not want to be like, yeah, so my mom and my dad were actually sinners for, 15 years, because I was born, 6 years into their marriage, seven years into their marriage, and I'm actually a bastard, so sorry. Like, who's going to want to do that? And she's like, pride is one of her main qualities. As the ambassador explained, she believed firmly that, this new a tactic that the king uses is only going to it's for him to be able to attain his end more easily, and it's actually covering poison, but she says that she cares little about being poisoned because she has full confidence in God that she will go straight to paradise because of the tribulations of this world, and her only grief is but the troubles of the queen her mother. I'm sorry, that is literally sounds like it's come straight up from Catherine's mouth, and it does not sound very healthy for an 18-year-old to be like, I'm fine if I die because I'm going to go to heaven. So screw you.
Yeah.
Bestie.
Bestie, no.
Bestie, no. Don't die, baby. You need to be the first crowned queen regnant of England. The conditions of Mary's house arrest were now growing more restrictive. She received fewer and fewer visitors, and anyone who did visit her was heavily scrutinized and then reported to the Privy Council. Often when people came to pay their respects to Elizabeth, Mary was locked in her room and the windows were nailed shut.
Great.
Fun. In February 1534, as she walked along a gallery, she was spotted by some local people, which was what they were afraid of, who called out to her as their princess and waved their caps. After that, she was watched more closely. Lady Shelton continued to torment Mary, and she said that if she were Henry, she would throw her out of the house for disobedience, and told her that the king is known to have said that she would make her lose her head for violating the laws of his realm. Whenever, it says, his realm, it really makes me feel like it's, a fantasy story, but no, it's just Henry being,
I know, that
extra.
Was just what I was thinking.
My realm. Oh, buddy. In February 1535, so 2 weeks before her 19th birthday, Mary fell dangerously ill with pain in her head and stomach, and it was feared that she had been poisoned. A lot of people blamed Anne, because, it's gotta be Anne. She's a witch! Henry was reported to be, very grieved at her sickness. Again, not really surprised. He still has a lot of feelings towards her. They're just very negative right now, because love and hate are very similar emotions.
Yeah.
Also, even if you hate your kid, hearing that they're sick probably is really hard. Yeah. So, because he doesn't want her to die. He thinks that she's wrong, and he just wants her to come say that he's right.
So rational.
Sociopath. He sent his own physician to her, Sir William Butts. And he instructed Chapuis to choose, one or two others to visit her, but their presence was going to be strictly controlled. They were not allowed to speak to Mary unless other people were present. And they're also not allowed to speak to her in any language other than English, and for fear that servants wouldn't understand it and she would use them to convey messages to the emperor. Butts informed the king that Mary's illness was partially caused by sorrow and trouble. Because, depression can cause physical symptoms. Yeah. And she's already very, she's never been a super healthy person. He advised that she should be sent to her mother because he said it would be less expensive and it would also be better for her health. Like, it would, that would do better for her than any, like, medicine that he could give her, basically. And then also, if she was at her mother's house and anything did happen to her, Henry would be free from suspicion. But he didn't do anything. And he declared that it was a great misfortune that she was so stubborn because she took away from him all occasion to treat her as well as he would. She's like, yeah, I would treat her well, guys, but, like, she's really stubborn, and I can't deal with it right now.
I can't deal with it.
He's very, like, Regina George-esque, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just kind of, like, head bitch in charge, but, like, mean. Because usually those are, like, the best characters, but he's the worst character, so I don't know. When Catherine learned of her daughter's condition, she asked Chapuis to, like, petition the king to reconsider that, like, Mary would be sent to her. She had grave suspicion about the cause of Mary's ill health, and she insisted that there is no need of any person but myself to nurse her. I will put her in my own bed where I sleep, and I will watch her when she needs it. But Henry again did nothing because he blamed Catherine for Mary's obstinacy and disobedience.
Yeah.
Thanks, Henry. He believed that if Mary had the comfort of her mother, there would be no hope of bringing her to do what he wanted, to renounce her lawful and true succession. He was hoping to break Mary's resolve by starving her of any affection, and this would hopefully blunt the threat that she and her mother represented. This is a teenager. I don't care if she's almost 19. She is still a kid. Your brain is not fully matured until you're 25. Like, she is a kid. He believed that if Mary had the comfort of her mother, then they're, like, it's just not going to work. The Lady Catherine, Henry declared, is a proud, stubborn woman of high courage. If she took it into her head to take her daughter's part, she could quite easily take the field, muster a great army, and wage against me a war as fierce as any her mother Isabella ever wages in Spain. This was, like, a grudge and acknowledgement on his part of Catherine's resolve and, like, her big lineage and her political savviness. But Mary unfortunately receives word through Lady Shelton that Henry now regards her as his worst enemy. It's nice. She's a teenager, buddy. Maybe you need to take a look at yourself. She had already succeeded in turning most of the Christian princes of Europe against him, and he believed that everything that she did, so all of her conduct, was calculated by herself to encourage conspiracy. Cromwell openly lamented the fact that by their very existence, Catherine and Mary were preventing good relations between England and the Holy Roman Empire. So Anne's very French, as we know. She's like, go France, go France, go, 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 go. And then Cromwell is like, for the Holy Roman Empire, which is a state of mind. That's like, I don't know. Let's have a song for the Holy Roman Empire. That's kind of boring. Charles, 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 Charles. Yeah, there you go. By early January 1535, Henry was losing patience. He's running out. Mary was told that she must take the oath, and on pain of her life, she must not call herself princess or her mother queen, but if she does, she will be sent to the Tower.
Right.
Yay! she's now desperate to escape England. A servant of the imperial ambassador who visited her at Eltham, I guess that's where Elizabeth is right now, I don't know, reported that she thinks of nothing else other than how it may be done, and her desire for it is increasing every day. Chapuis had raised the prospect of her escaping frequently over the previous 2 years, but then the immediate danger had, like, receded and the plans had never developed any further. But this time it was different because Mary felt the danger was greater than ever. She sent word to Chapuis, begging himself most urgently to think over the matter, otherwise she could have considered herself lost because she thought that they wanted to kill her. So really, Catherine has told her, like, it's okay if you die, but she's terrified of death. I mean, same. And she doesn't really want to die. But Henry was suspicious of Mary's intentions because he knows what's going on. He's smart. I don't know. Is he smart? Yeah, he is smart. He's actually very intelligent. He's just a sociopath. He's suspicious of her intentions, and so he ordered that armed watches were kept around at every single house that Mary stayed at, and troops were placed at every seaport within a day's ride of these residences. Shipui was really, really scared for Mary because he cares a lot about her, and he's worried that she's going to be made an example of to show that no one can disobey the laws. And he was also worried that Henry was going to fulfill what had been foretold of him. That was that at the beginning of his reign, he would be as gentle as a lamb, which is true. They all loved him then. And at the end, he was going to be worse than a lion. So like how March comes in like a lamb, goes out like a lion. They were worried that was going to be Henry. And now Mary's life is getting even worse. At 2 p.m. of Friday, January 7th, 1536, Catherine of Aragon died in her chamber at Kimbolton Castle. She was 50 years old and had suffered with pain in her stomach for several months. She had begged Henry to allow Mary to visit her as she's dying. But mother and daughter, who had been separated for 4 years, were not allowed to have a final meeting. Catherine had been taken ill about 5 weeks before she died, according to Shipui, but the attack renewed on the morning of Christmas Day. It was a pain in the stomachs, and it was so violent that she couldn't keep any food down. He asked the physician several times if there was any suspicion of poison. The physician was afraid that it was so, for after she had drunk some Welsh beer, she had been worse, and that it was a slow and subtle poison if there was one. Unfortunately, this physician maybe was just like, oh, you know, it could be poison, I don't know. But Catherine's supporters didn't need, like, any persuading to immediately jump on. Anne's killing her. It's poison. It's the Boleyns. They're witches. Yeah. When in reality, right now, Anne's probably like, okay, so pregnant. This one needs to stay. Catherine's death now had altered Charles, Holy Roman Emperor's position in relation to England. He wasn't bound to Mary as he had been to her mother. Like, Catherine's his aunt, Mary's his cousin, but, like, Catherine wrote to Charles, like, all the time. I don't think Mary did do that. So he doesn't feel as strong of a connection to Mary as he did to her mom. And now he's resuming hostilities with France. So he's, like, fighting with France again, and he's looking once again to court English favor because, you know, fighting with France, there's three main powers in Europe. Mm-hmm. And so they're switching around who's alliance with who. He wrote to Shipui at the end of February that a renewal of like amity might be better to do now, with some suitable provision for the princess than it would have been able to, like, it would be easier now than it would have been during Catherine's life. 4 days after Catherine's death, Lady Shelton went to Mary and told her most unceremoniously that her mother was dead. That evening, Mary requested that Catherine's physician and her apothecary could come visit her so that she could hear about her mother's final hours and about how she died. As Charles told Isabella, his wife, Mary was inconsolable at the loss she has sustained, especially when she thinks of her father's past behavior towards herself and the little favor she can expect for the future. It was feared that she would die of grief, or with Catherine out of the way, Anne might hasten what she has long threatened to do, kill her. Fearing that Henry's affection was declining, Anne sought to be reconciled with Mary as a means of securing her own favor. She instructed Lady Shelton to tell Mary that if she would lay down aside her obstinacy and obey her father, Anne would be the best friend in the world to her, like another mother, and would obtain for her anything that she would like, and that if she wished to come to court, Mary wouldn't have to hold the tail of her gown. Because she would be a bastard, so she'd be like behind Anne. If she was a princess, then she wouldn't have to, because they're not going to make Elizabeth walk around behind her mom holding her gown. That's a little weird. But Mary would not be swayed. As Lady Shelton informed Anne, she would rather die 100 times than change her opinion or do anything against her honor and conscience. Stupid conscience, gosh. So, like a recurring theme with Tudors.
My conscience.
The conscience.
Mary now once again raised the prospect with Shipui that maybe she could flee to the imperial court in Brussels. If she had something that she could drug the women that, you know, were taking care of her with, she could easily escape and pass under Lady Shelton's window and then find some means to break open or open the garden gate. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Mary, I don't think you've ever done a spy mission before, hun. How do you think she thinks she's suddenly like a spy kid?
She's like, but so cool.
I don't think she is. She'd literally be in like a big dress, because even if she doesn't have a lot of money for like good clothes, she's still in like a massive dress. It's the 1530s, and she's just like, I could like climb down and break the garden gate. I've been a princess for like my entire life. I could do it
totally,
babes.
Easy.
Yeah, definitely could. As the ambassador reported, she was so eager to escape from all her troubles and dangers that if he were to advise her, like, if he was like, Mary, here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna cross the channel in a sieve. She would do it.
She would.
He's like, here, Mary, here's, like, a canoe that has holes all along the bottom and will, like, sink. She'd be like, all right, on it, let's go.
Cool.
That's really sad. But Chapuis was like, okay, no, let's think through this. You're at Hunston, which is 40 miles from Gravesend. From Gravesend, she would be taken to Flanders. But any escape plan would, she would have to ride through a lot of villages and towns, which meant that she would be at high risk of discovery or capture. For now, it was simply too hazardous an undertaking for him. He didn't want her to be hurt. And he recommends that she wait until Easter, when she could be moved again, hopefully to somewhere more convenient from which to escape. But, you know, by Easter, Anne's time is coming to an end, so they aren't as concerned anymore. A certain blonde someone is going to show up. And, yeah. In the meantime, Chapuis told Mary that she should continue mourning, and if she was approached by the king's officers, to beg them to leave her alone so that she could grieve for her mom. If she was pressed by them, she should tell them that she was thinking of entering a convent when she reached full age, which would then stun them. I mean, yeah, she's a princess. Like, she's not a princess, but, like, she has Henry's blood. He probably wouldn't want her to go into a convent.
Yeah.
Mary was becoming increasingly hysterical, and Chapuis says that she is continually asking me to beg the emperor to hasten the remedy, which she fears would be too late for her, for which reason she is daily preparing herself for death. So I think she thinks she's going to be poisoned every moment. She's like, they poisoned my mom, they're going to poison me, I'm about to die.
Oh, poor babe.
Scary. Scary, scary, scary.
Very
stuff.
Scary.
In early February, Mary changed residence. Chapuis reported that the princess was well and better accompanied on her removal and provided with what was necessary to her than she had been before. Henry put about 100,000 crowns at her disposal to distribute in alms, and it was rumored that the king meant to increase her train and exalt her permission. But, as Chapuis wrote, this was before Anne's miscarriage. Yeah, so Henry then shared with someone in great confidence his doubts about Anne. He said that he had made this marriage seduced by witchcraft, and for this reason he considered it null, blah, 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 blah. There goes Henry complaining about not having any male children again, when he's the only one. He's been the common factor in all of these marriages. Again. Literally, buds, you have had two wives combined. Catherine had, like, 7 pregnancies. Anne had 3, probably. That's 10 pregnancies, 2 kids. Who has been the only common factor, Henry? You.
Newsflash.
Think about it. Newsflash, buddy. And then you had 4 more wives, and only one of them had a child.
Who died young.
Yeah, at 15. And it was probably her first pregnancy. Maybe her second. She actually might have had a miscarriage. That's, some people think that. Yeah, so thanks, Henry. God. I mean, I don't think he slept with Anne of Cleves, so they didn't have opportunities to have children. but yeah, Henry now believes that he might take another wife. He's been making much of Lady of the Court named Jane Seymour. She's 25. She's the daughter of a Wiltshire gentleman. And she was formerly in the service of Catherine of Aragon and now Anne Boleyn. And she's now the focus of the king's attention. As for Anne, her heart broke when she saw that he loved others. That is the line in the Tudors when she has that miscarriage because Jane is sitting on his knee.
Oh, yeah.
And she's, like, in the bed and she looks like an animal. Like, the way that Natalie's, like, moving literally makes me cry if I even just see, like, a clip of it.
I'm like, ugh.
Where is that woman's Emmy? Oh, my God. She needs a BAFTA, at least. Like, a British television and film or whatever, those things. But whatever. So, Mary's supporters are making, like, a little girl gang, except it's all men. Boy gang? Boy band. They're making a boy band. Well, there's actually, like, some women, but, like, it's mostly the men. The Marquess and Marchioness of Exeter. So, that's Gertrude and William Courtenay. Courtenay is, they're related to Henry somehow through one of his mom's sisters. Lord Montague, who's the son of Margaret Pole, Sir Nicholas Carew, the master of horse, and Chapuis, So that's their little gang. They were trying to capitalize on Anne's loss of favor and looked towards restoring Mary as the rightful heir to the throne. Jane Seymour's sympathy for Mary was really well known. 2 years earlier, she had actually sent to Mary to tell her to be of good cheer and that her troubles would sooner come to an end than she supposed, and that when the opportunity occurred, Jane would show herself to be Mary's true and devoted servant. Jane, do you have the gift of prophecy? Why are you like, when the opportunity occurs, I will be your true servant. Your troubles will come to an end sooner than you suppose. Like, bro, okay, what? Then. Jane Seymour is actually, she actually has the gift of seeing the future.
She has the gift, guys. She has the gift.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why she was content when she died, because she knew that in 500 years, Natalie May Paris would be playing her for longer than she was queen.
Yeah, which is really sad.
That's so sad. Literally, what the heck? Jane was queen for, like, a year and a half, and Natalie has been playing. It's literally almost been a year and a half of just, like, quarantine where Natalie has been, like, playing her, but not actually on stage, and she's already here for, like, 3 years before that.
Yeah.
Natalie, are you Jane?
Are you?
We want to know. We're actually asking. This is a sincere question. yeah, but guys, unfortunately, Anne died.
Yeah.
Plot twist.
We didn't know that.
We didn't know that was happening. On the day after Anne died, Henry was betrothed to Jane Seymour. Yeah. They were married 10 days later in the Queen's closet at Whitehall. Yeah. In the closet. But that, it's not like a real closet. It's like a big room. Well, not like big, but probably the size of my bedroom.
Wow.
It's a closet, but it's the Queen's closet, and also the closet doesn't mean the place where she stores her clothes. Chapuis told Antoine Perrineau, who's the Emperor's minister, that Jane is the sister of a certain Edward Seymour, who has been in the service of His Majesty, while she herself was formerly in the household of the Good Queen, who's Catherine. They don't call Anne the Good Queen. She's that dead lady that died. The ambassador described Jane as being of middle stature and no great beauty. She was so fair that he would call her rather pale than otherwise. Yeah. Her personal motto is the most G-rated thing I've ever heard. bound to obey and serve. It's very bland. Sorry, Jane. I do think that you probably had to choose a bland motto because, you know, she's got to be like, Henry, I'm the complete opposite of Anne. I'm so bland.
Look at me.
Look at me.
Don't you want me?
I feel like she'd be really good at ASMR. On Whit Sunday, I'm going to talk like Jane Seymour. Just like really boring. I'm not going to do ASMR, guys. Don't worry. On Whit Sunday, June 4th, she was formally proclaimed queen. For most of the 3 years that Anne had been queen, Mary had lived in fear of death. Now, with a new stepmother whose patrons were Mary's leading supporters at court. They're the boy band. They're NSYNC. Are they NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys?
I don't know.
Or One Direction.
Yeah.
One Direction. More One Direction. They're British. Also, we weren't alive during when the other ones were popular. Now, with a new stepmother, there was hope of a return to favor and to the line of succession. Even before Anne's execution, Jane had, much to Henry's annoyance, begged for Mary's restoration. But Henry had resisted. Okay, I'm bored of that. Henry is mad. He says that Jane was a fool and ought to solicit the advancement of the children that they would have between them and not any others. But Jane was not deterred. In asking for the restoration of Mary as princess, she thought that she was seeking for tranquility of Henry, herself, her future children, and the whole realm. She's so, like, extra.
She really is.
But not at the exact same time. Jane Seymour is just, like, a massive contradiction. After the fall of Anne Boleyn, Mary hoped that she might regain her father's favor. She waited at Hunsdon to be summoned to court, but when no word came, she wrote to Cromwell asking him to intercede with Henry now that, literally, this quote-unquote, that woman, end quote, was dead.
Oh.
Dad, that woman's dead now. Can I come see you? 4 days later, Mary wrote again, thanking him for leave to write to the king. She's like, can I write to my dad? And assured him that you shall find me as obedient to the king's grace as you can reasonably require of me. She thought that this would be enough to have Henry stop being mad at her, because she thinks that Anne's been the reason he's been mad at her this entire time. That Anne has been whispering into his ear going, yeah, Mary sucks, and he is so bewitched by Anne. But here's the thing. Henry is his own person. unfortunately, in some ways. But, like, he is his own person. He is not a puppet of Anne. He is very much his own person. If he was her puppet, she wouldn't have died. Would she have killed herself? No. She has a kid. She's not going to do that. Yeah, so read Broken Return by me. Don't. But yeah, that's literally Mary's whole arc in that story. Mary thinks that that's going to be fine. She's like, yeah, my dad's going to be fine now. We're going to be best friends again. and that's going to make Henry permit her to once again, like, she can come see him. Cromwell was enlisted as mediator between Henry and Mary as Jane was pressing for reconciliation. So now Jane is probably playing for, like, a somewhat different angle than Anne was. But Henry is in the exact same position. What? He's remained determined that Mary would submit to his will. The price of his restored favor, so what she's going to have to do to get him back, is to completely submit to everything that he says. Not a very healthy father-daughter relationship. This is why she has daddy issues. Massive daddy issues. On June 1st, Mary addressed a letter to Henry directly. In as humble and lowly a manner as is possible for a child to use to her father, she begged for forgiveness. You ready? It's not the full letter because it was written, but I was like, we're not reading that. It's too long. I beseech your grace of your daily blessing, which is my chief desire in the world, and in the same humble ways, acknowledging all the offenses that I have done, I pray your grace in the honor of God and for your fatherly pity to forgive me them, for the which I am sorry as any creature living, and next unto God, I do and will submit me in and all things to your goodness and pleasure to do with me whatsoever shall please your grace. She prayed for God to send him a prince, whereof she declared, no creature living shall more rejoice or heartier pray for continually than I, and signed herself, your grace's most humble and obedient daughter and handmaid Mary. But she still hasn't, like, submit everything, because here's the thing. She thought, oh yeah, my dad's gonna be fine now because I just signed myself Mary. But her letter wasn't written with any response because she had submitted to her father next unto God. So Henry would like himself to be above God, I guess. I don't know. Even though he thinks that God is telling him what to do. So I think that Henry needs to take a look at himself. Once again, Henry needs some therapy to figure out what is going on in his life. she wrote again, begging to receive some sign of his favor and to be called into his presence. But once again, there was no reply. On the 10th, she drafted another letter, but this time she sent the copy to Cromwell first. In it, she declared herself most humbly prostrate before your noble feet, your most obedient subject and humble child, that hath not only repented her offenses hitherto, but also decreed simply from henceforth and wholly next to Almighty God to put my state, continuance, and living in your gracious mercy. Cromwell's letter back to her doesn't survive, but his disapproval is very clear from Mary's reply. He was mad at her response, and he actually enclosed a draft for her guidance, instructed her to write again to the king and to send him a copy. So basically, he sent her a letter and was like, this is what you're writing to him. Write this. Just in your handwriting. No. She did do it. She copied Cromwell's draft word for word. And then she addressed the king once more. She begged in my most humble and lowly manner for his daily blessing and permission to come into his presence. And then she continued, I have written twice unto your highness, trusting to have, by some gracious letters, token, or message, perceived sensibly the mercy, clemency, and pity of your grace, and upon the operation of the same. At the last also to have obtained the fruition of your most noble presence, which above all worldly things I desire. Yet I have not obtained my said fervent and hearty desire, nor any piece of the same. To my great and intolerable discomfort, I am enforced, by the compulsion of nature, F. Sones, to cry unto your merciful ears, and most humbly prostrate before your feet. She signed off by petitioning for some little spark of my humble suit and desire, and praying God to preserve your highness with the queen and shortly to send you issue, which shall be gladder tidings to me than I can express in writing, your most humble and obedient daughter and handmaid, Mary. So she's finally done it. It has been a lot of years in the making. Henry's response was direct and unequivocal. Within days, he sent a delegation of counselors that were headed by the Duke of Norfolk to visit Mary at Hunsdon to demand that she take the oath of allegiance and make a complete submission. The counselors condemned her. These are a bunch of grown men talking to, like, she's still a kid. She's like 20. They condemned her for her earlier refusal to obey as a monster in nature, and they told her it was a freakish departure from the natural obedience of a daughter towards her father. Any other man would have sent her away, but given Henry's gracious and divine nature, he was willing to withhold his displeasure if Mary would now submit to him. Would she accept all the laws and statutes of the realm? Would she accept Henry as supreme head of the church and repudiate the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome? Would she acknowledge that her mother's marriage was invalid and accept all the laws and statutes of the realm? Her answer to each was no. Good job, Mary. Good job. She was willing to obey her father once again in all matters except those that injured her mother, her present honor, or her faith, and in this she was very steadfast. Norfolk angrily said that so unnatural was she to oppose the king's will, this is really mean, that they could scarcely believe she was his bastard, and if she were their daughter, they would beat her and knock her head so hard against the wall that it made it as soft as a baked apple. She was a traitress, and she should be punished. Yeah, this is a 20-year-old. She is also the king's daughter. She is 20 years old. That's second year university. Jeez. Like, calm yourself, Norfolk. This is why I hate you. But they left, and they instructed Lady Shelton to keep her under constant surveillance day and night and to make sure she spoke to no one. The danger to Mary was now as great as it had been during the months before her mom's death. So they had thought, like, she was going to be fine now that Anne was dead. Well, actually, she's now in just as much danger as she was while Anne was alive. So maybe it wasn't Anne that was causing her all this danger. According to Ralph Morris, who was Thomas Cranmer's old secretary, Henry was fully ready to send Mary's daughter to the Tower. And he was going to make her suffer there as a subject instead of like his kid, because she wouldn't obey the laws of the realm.
Wow.
Yeah. Judges were commanded to proceed with a legal inquiry into Mary's treachery and sentence her as willfully defiant of king's authority. But they didn't really want to do it, so they gave Mary one final chance. She was to be sent a document entitled Lady Mary's Submission, which detailed all the points that the king required her to agree to. If she refused to sign those, then legal proceedings would begin and she would be charged with treason. Yeah, she's almost dying at the same age that Catherine Howard did die.
Mm.
Mary, maybe you could have found some empathy in your heart.
Maybe. Just a little
Catherine. Just a little bit, but that's not her. Mary sent word to Chapuis begging his counsel, and he told her that if the king persisted in this, and if she truly believed that her life was in danger, then she needed to consent to what her father was telling her to do. He told her that this was what the emperor wanted, and that to save her life, she had to do everything. Like, he was like, honey, your life is the most important thing right now. Like, you shush. I wish Chapuis was her dad. Oh my god. You haven't even seen the Mary and Chapuis scenes in season 4. They are the sweetest things ever. Except for the one time that she cries. But then it's still really sweet. It's just like sad. They literally have like meetings, like alone in her bedroom. I'm like, okay, why are you allowed to do that? But like, that's cool with me. Because it's Mary and Chapuis. They aren't doing anything. But yeah, it's literally the sweetest thing. And now I'm remembering it and it's making me really emo. But on Thursday, June 22nd, 1536, under threat of death. Here's the thing. When you are threatened with death, anything that you sign is not legally binding. Like, if you're being blackmailed into signing something, I'm pretty sure it doesn't
That's
count.
Good.
Just like if you're tortured into a confession, it is not like it can't be considered as actual evidence. So I'd assume this probably the same sort of thing. But she signed the formal statement that was required of her on June 22nd. In the confession of me, the Lady Mary, made upon certain points and articles underwritten, she acknowledged the illegitimacy of her mother's marriage, her own bastard status, and her father's supreme headship of the Church of England. In one single stroke, she was forced to betray the memory of her mother and the Catholic faith of her childhood, which were the two most important things in her life. She had signed away everything that her mother had resisted until her death, and everything that Mary herself had clung to and fought so hard to defend. It was in this moment of, like, total submission that the seeds of Mary's future defiance are sown. And that's where we're ending. Because I love giving you guys cliffhangers to force you to keep listening. It is sheer force at this point. But thank you to everybody that keeps listening. We have, like, several solid listeners. Even though we can't see, like, who's listening because it's not that fancy. We can see, like, the number of plays, and y'all are pretty chill.
God, I'm tired.
You guys should go check us out on social media because I have really funny memes that I made for this episode.
She does.
And they're really funny, and everything that I post on there is really funny because I am a comedian. I'm not.
Yes, she is.
I'm not. I just really like making fun of Mary. I'm just kidding. It's not Mary. I like making fun of Henry. Yeah, so you should go do that. You should follow us on Twitter so that Katie and Nathan are not our only followers on Twitter. And it's not even like Nathan. I don't think he has any passwords to any of their accounts. It's just Katie. I'm sure she doesn't listen. I think she just follows us. But, like, thanks, Katie.
Thanks,
for being
Katie.
Our only follower. You feel like I feel like I know you, but I don't. So yeah, thanks. Here's some quotes from Millie O'Connell's Twitter, because I just went onto Twitter and she is one of, like, five people that we follow. Tonight holds a lot of bubblies in the fridge energy. Okay, Mills. Thanks. I didn't get to do her dance class today. I'm actually really mad. Her pinned tweet is, "Morning, Beyonce. I love you. My inspiration." Inspiration is spelt wrong.
Love that for her.
I love her. Love that for her. Yeah. You should just, like, go cry. Don't actually cry. I'm going to go cry because I'm just really happy. Go follow us on Instagram at @notsobloodymary_podcast. Go follow us on Twitter at @bloody_not. It's a weird username, I know, but Twitter has signed it to us and I can't get rid of it because I don't understand Twitter. Go watch
Pitch
Perfect.
Just like we did.
Comfort movie. That one girl sounded so much like Naya, it actually, like, threw me for a loop. I don't know. It was the one that got kicked out and dragged her chair, like, but she didn't drag her chair. She was just, like, not there anymore, and they're like, where is she? It's kind of sad, because she was a really good singer. Or maybe they just had Naya reversing, and she lip-synced. Because it sounded exactly like her. It was really scary. Yeah. So go do that, and go follow Grace on TikTok at the lovely _bookworm. She doesn't post a lot right now because she's in a reading slump. But you can just stalk her and watch every single one of her TikToks.
Yes, but don't spam, like, because I'll be...
And I'm on one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, and please, if you comment on that, please don't say a person of color because I'm white. Very white.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. Heads up, guys. All of my great-grandparents are, like, Scottish and British. And I think Irish, maybe, but, like, definitely not a person of color.
Yeah.
So, thanks. Yeah. And you should go tell someone that you love them or hug them. And if you have a pet, you should go cuddle them, because my dog was really sad today when I was dancing and she kept getting in the way. And I was like, I'm trying to do a pirouette. Can you move?
I have something they should do today. Okay.
What should they do?
Get out, like, a piece of paper and, like, scribble on it, scribble out your feelings with different colors.
Yes, go do that. Also, here's another tweet from Millie O'Connell. The butterfly feeling in your tummy when you listen to a friend sing the pride. One of my favorite feelings, the pride. You should go just like have a fun time. And we love you. And also, I might be starting another podcast with my friend Henry because we don't have enough to do. And if you watch Once Upon a Time, you should keep an eye out for our podcast that we will hopefully be creating. Grace has never actually heard about that before because Henry and I have been storyboarding it for like a week now. But yeah, so yeah, go listen to Taylor Swift sing. Go watch Taylor Swift's All Too Well performance at like the Grammys or whatever, where she like fully broke down. Yeah. Also the one where she was like, someday I'll be singing this at the Grammys and all you're ever gonna be is me. That song. My mom hated that song when I was little because she's like, it's very rude. I don't think that it's promoting positive things. Thanks, Mom.
Love yeah, that.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Grace. Bye.